Hey everyone, welcome to RTG at the Movies. This episode, Sev and I are going to have a discussion about Zack Snyder's Justice League, written and directed by Zack Snyder, obviously. Starring Henry Cavill, Ben Affleck, Gal Gadot, Ray Fisher, and Jason Momoa. As always, this is going to be a spoiler-filled review. Now, we're also going to spoil the 2017 Justice League, also by quote-unquote Zack Snyder, but mostly done by Joss Whedon. So yeah, how you doing, Seth? What's going on?
Pretty good, bro. I'm excited to get into this.
You ready for this big boy? Yeah.
4-hour epic.
yeah. So like before we get started, I just want to kind of, so we're reviewing Zack Snyder's Justice League, but you know, you got to talk about the original. That's blasphemy. Not the original. You got to talk about the theatrical cut. Because many might argue this is the original, but so the original Justice League came out in 2017. What were your general thoughts on it?
You know, there was so much hype behind it that I don't think no matter what came out of that movie, it was not going to be good. And at the same time, you heard about like, hey, the director left in the middle or like towards the end and there was additional filming. Like there was just so much talking that it felt like the artistic work was being, I don't want to say use the word manipulated, but like altered because of like Hollywood executives and Warner Brothers seeking sort of like a Marvel movie that they can generally sell to the audience. But it wasn't what the original, when we'll get into it, like there's a reason why this movie came out and there's like an arc to it, whereas in the other one did not seem that way.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, I think I thought the original theatrical cut Justice League was kind of it was really all over the place. You know, it was just choppy.
Yep.
It was something, I mean, I'm the type of person, I think this is to the detriment of my film going experience, but I'm the type of person that likes to like do my background research on the film while it's being made. So it's kind of cool. It's like exciting. You get some like, you know, information on, oh, they shot this scene or like, if you're lucky, or hey, like this actor plays in it, this director is on. But with this Justice League, it was a big deal because it was drama galore, right? Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about that in a little bit, exactly in detail what happened. But as a result, that hype train really went like above and beyond. Like everyone was wondering what's going to happen. Is this movie going to be coherent even after a director left, you know, more than halfway through shooting? And I think all of that showed in the 2017 Justice League. I think you can totally tell. You could tell where Joss Whedon attempted to Marvelize Justice League.
Absolutely.
You can tell where like the reshoots were. God, Superman's mustache or lack of. I mean, Superman doesn't originally have a mustache, but the actor, Henry Cavill, was shooting Mission Impossible 5, I think.
Yeah, he was a villain with a mustache.
He was the badass villain that pumped his fists. It was very amazing. And he, I guess for the reshoots, they wanted him to come back. And it was Paramount that was doing the Mission Impossible. And obviously Justice League is done by Warner Brothers. So Warner Brothers has spoke to Paramount and said, hey, like we need Henry Cavill to come back. Let him shave his mustache off, obviously, so he can do a couple of reshoots. And then we'll digitally add on a mustache onto Henry Cavill for the scenes where he hasn't grown it. That would have worked out way better. But Paramount doesn't give a shit. They don't want to sacrifice their movie in any way. And I don't blame them, to be honest. You know, they had a contract and that's it. So they're like, no. So what they decided to do? They decided to do the worst. One of the worst, like, cut and paste. Like, Sev, you told me, like, last week you got, like, Photoshop Plus or some shit like that.
Yeah.
You could have done a better job. Not only could you have done it, there are Redditors out there that did that entire scene, like digitally done, redone, touched up better than the one of the in the theatrical cut of Justice League. So it was atrocious. And that was the beginning scene of the movie. Justice League 2017 starts off with that. Right? It starts off with like music, yada yada, and it gets to that scene. It's just Jesus. After that, I felt like this movie was a downhill. And it really was. Not I to say there wasn't any character development is a, is an understatement. I think the one person that got like the biggest shaft was Ray Fisher, you know, as Cyborg. After we watch, like, we'll talk about it, but after the Zack Snyder Justice League with all the footage that he's originally in, it's just unbelievable what happened. It's truly unbelievable. So overall, yeah, just the theatrical cut of Justice League 2017 was a major disappointment, you know?
And I think that's what basically resulted in that's, I guess, the Justice League, whatever, like they couldn't get it together. Like with like them trying to say like, oh, we're gonna come in and save the day and make this Marvel kind of DC world. They fucked up because you know what I wanted? DC in my ways has always kind of been like a horror. I mean the raw version of like, hey, it's gritty, it's dark, you know? And specifically if you're involved Batman in any way, I know that Marvel also has its really like dark sides as well too. No pun intended. But like in general, it's like when you view Batman, he's the Dark Knight. So his it's not supposed to be all lights and colors and glowy stuff like.
Yeah, I agree 100%. So basically, like transitioning us to the next topic, what do you think happened behind the scenes? Like, what happened that we got the 2017 version, and what had to go down for us to get this 2021 version?
I think it really fell down to like box office draw and money because I think at the time the Avengers came out and became like the biggest, like, hey, we made like $1 billion. And then, but at the same time, the Avengers had several movies to bring. We had like five movies to bring the Avengers together. Whereas in this one, you had one, fast forward, and then let's say let's everyone's here together. It just didn't work out that way. And I think they were just like, hey, we're falling behind. We're losing this market. How can we get it back? And there was just, I just even remember seeing what was it like the Comic Cons, and they would put up the trailer, and it was like the Batman logo and the Spider Batman and the Superman logo. I just think like it just became into a change of ownership, and I think at the time too there was Warner Brothers. It's you know its parent company is like Team
AT&T.
AT&T. They got purchased. There's like all this merger stuff. There's a lot of money being lost. Like AT&T in general is bleeding a lot of money. They're like, hey, we need to make sure we capitalize on this product in every way possible. And I think creating what Zack Snyder was trying to do was like, hey, like I'm trying to create like this multiple universe. And they're like, no, we just need this summer hit right now so we can just do separate movies.
Yeah,
They did
he's
the
trying to make,
opposite.
yeah, he's trying to make the Snyderverse, and it just didn't work out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the real reason, quote unquote, real reason, is probably not as romanticized and is not as, you know, entertaining. The it's probably a financial reason. Like, you know, maybe in like later on in film history, we'll look back and see what exactly the reasons were. But basically, a general idea I got was, yeah, excuse me. Obviously, so basically, Zack Snyder had to leave halfway through the project because his daughter passed away or committed suicide. So it was a tough time. And the producer of the film was also Deborah Snyder, which was his wife. So they both had to step away, which is completely understandable. But I think even before that tragedy, WB was just trying to give Snyder the shaft. They were just sick of it. They wanted they were sick of it in the sense I th so for what I read, they wanted a more lighter universe, and Zack Snyder had this idea of a much more darker, grittier one. And I think he took that after, you know, and Nolan was producing a lot of these films, you know. It was like executive producing, and he wasn't really hands-on, but he was involved. And Nolan is pretty close friends with Zack Snyder and Deborah Snyder. So What I think happened was Zach loved Nolan's take on his trilogy, the Dark Knight trilogy, and he wanted to make something like that, except more comic book accurate. And he likes to do flashy movies. I think he's a great director, you know? He likes to do like splash page movies. He really does. He's like a comic book movie guy. Like the way his movies 300, all that stuff look exactly like that. So I think initially WB agreed with that, but once they saw the reactions of, hey, why isn't like Man of Steel more colorful? Why isn't it more like positive? Why is Superman so negative? Why is he fighting? Why did Superman kill Zod? All this stuff gets worse and worse. And then I think the nail in the coffin was BVS. So when BVS came around, and we had just reviewed it too, when BVS came around, people were like, dude, what is this? This is too dark. An introduction to the new Batman, which surprisingly everyone destroyed Ben Affleck for being Batman before it came out. And then when it came out, everyone loved him. But the main criticism they had for him was he was far too dark. He was killing people left and right. Like if Superman was snapping necks, this guy was breaking bones and bashing brains on walls. Like it was insane. It was beautiful. And I loved it.
I still think he's the best Batman ever. Like,
Yeah. I agree. I agree. I love him as Bruce Wayne too.
he's the best dual role
Yeah.
person.
Yeah, he's so swole. I just love that, you know. He's the Arkham Asylum like Batman, you know, the Arkham game. So when that happened, I think the producers and basically like the higher ups in WB probably went like, listen, we got to get this guy out. And there were rumors of how to like get him out and stuff like that. And they wanted to get a more Marvel feel. So guess what you do? Guess what you do?
You hired Josh Whedon?
You hire Joss Whedon, the guy that Marvel does not want to do anything with that much anymore because he did some weird shit with women. So they're not going to
He's
mess with that.
blacklisted, by the way. Right now,
Yeah.
he's completely blacklisted in Hollywood. Nobody will touch him.
Yeah, he has a new show coming out, but yeah.
Rightfully so. If like if you did
Yeah.
fucked up shit, like you deserve to be like, and that's the
Totally.
worst thing too is like, I feel like if you're in Hollywood, unless you've actually fully like have been like committed or like did something, you're kind of like, okay, we're gonna move you out from the side door. You're
Yeah.
gonna get like all these executive producer stuff, and
Well,
it
James
just
Gunn you. Yeah.
or something to the degree, because even like R. Kelly was still making music with people, and people were talking. Like, I mean, Chappelle's Show came out like when I was in high school,
Yeah.
and he was like peeing on girls, and this was widely known. Like, I mean, Chappelle was making jokes about this, and like
Yeah.
everybody, and it's not a funny subject, but I'm just saying, like,
No.
he was making jokes about it, and we all laughed because it was good and funny and entertaining. But people knew about this, and a lot of entertainers were still making music with them. And you would think someone, let's say, and I'm a giant Lady Gaga fan, very, she, you can sense she's a very progressive person, still made a very hit song with R. Kelly. Saying, do
Yeah.
what you want with my body, and they performed it on SNL live,
Jesus.
where they
Jesus.
were kind of dressed up as like how do you say JFK and Marilyn Monroe kind of thing, and but this was happening. So, anyways, going back, like Josh Whedon, bye, fuck you know.
Yeah. Exactly. So Joss Whedon got the shaft from Marvel and Disney. And so what did they do? They're like, cool, we have an opening. Let's hire this guy. How are we going to get Zach out? Well, they just waited and they got their time, unfortunately. And honestly, it's a disgusting thing. They basically took advantage of him at his most vulnerable state. And it was messed up. So, I mean, this is a very To me, this is a very touching moment, and I think to a lot of people, a very touching like rebirth of a person that put their life and dedication into something, a piece of art, you know. And say what you must about like the movie or even like Snyder's take on things. He has a bunch of movies that aren't the best, you know. Like Sucker Punch isn't the best movie, you know. There's a lot of things that he does that's like strange choices, but you gotta admit the guy has some passion and he has heart. And it's been proven, and this really just solidified that. So, after the passing, and after they both stepped away, they hired Joss Whedon to come and just somehow Frankenstein this movie. The choices after watching the Snyder Cut, the choices Joss made is just mind-boggling. the choices of him, I don't know if it was him or it was actual studio interference, because there's some talk about Ray Fisher and the higher ups in WB having issues too. But I mean, mainly Ray Fisher issues, but even just the general story, the final scene of this movie, you know, it's just unbelievable. So, you know, that all happened. It got released, and this is widely known. Zack Snyder did not watch the 2017. He still has not seen the 2017.
Good. Justice and a lot of people shouldn't.
Yeah.
They try to make money off merchandise and sell toys.
Yeah. So Nolan, I guess, went and watched Justice League 2017. And then right after called Deborah Snyder, his wife, and Zack Snyder, and told him, like, told Deborah to tell Zack not to ever watch this movie.
Wow.
Because it's just going to hurt you too much.
It's sacrilege. You know, the sort of like, I'm my darkest moment in my life, and you're like stabbing me in the back at the same time too, with like my passion. So sort of like you destroy, like, I think that's one of the most things, like, imagine you destroy someone's passion.
Yeah.
Or like your art, like, you all of a sudden, here's my Picasso, and someone's going to be like, oh yeah, let me bedazzle it a little bit. That's what this movie was. Let me try to bedazzle your movie. Fail miserably.
And you know what really hurt me when I first watched it, and even when I watched it recently?
Mm-hmm.
The first scene, as the song is going, I forgot what song it was. It was like a Leonard Cohen song.
Yeah.
It's a classic. You would think it would be a Zack Snyder song, by the way. And it wasn't.
Yeah, because he does that. Because
he does that. It says a homeless guy sitting there, and there's this like sign, and it says, I tried. And right when it says that, I don't know if these pieces of shit did it on purpose or not, but right when it says that, it says directed by Zack Snyder.
I know. That's what I don't like.
Like, and because
that's not his work.
Yeah. I was like, when I saw that first, before obviously the Snyder Cut thing ever happened, when I watched the movies, I was like, that hurt me. I was like, damn, is that Zack's trying to say, like, hey, man, I tried? You know?
No, I don't think so, man.
But it wasn't.
Yeah, it wasn't. Good thing.
That was added on. Yeah. So, yeah, fast forward a bunch of petitions later, including the one I signed at petition.org that said bring the Snyder Cut back. And 4 years later, an unbelievable amount of loyalty and fans, a lot of money being donated to what was that organization? The Suicide Prevention Organization. Yeah. A lot of money donated to that, and a lot of money donated to, like, basically advertisement for the Snyder Cut. Fully funded by fans, you know, like, I think there was one in like Manhattan Square or something like that, banners, everything like that. So they, unbelievable. When I heard the announcement like a year and a half ago that this thing was actually going to happen, I was completely shocked. You know, I was completely shocked. And then I was also shocked to hear that it was going to be a 4-hour movie.
That just tells you how much work he did. Because typically with stuff like that, is that movie could have been two movies. It could have been two great movies, just like his other ones too. They could have been every movie that he's made. They all could have been separate movies and all like great. Like, give me like a 1 hour of best parts. I'll be happy with that.
100%. So, like, that leads us into the next topic of length. And what did you think of the length of the film? I mean, did you think it was it like unbearable? Was it like great? Was it perfect for the movie? What was it?
I mean, it's going to be realistic. Like, we're not going to be able to watch it. We're talking about an era right now that we're all working from home, living from home. We have like Hulu and all these other apps, and we watch things, we put them on pause. It works perfectly now. If this was given to me back then, there had to be a part two. There had to be like a cliffhanger part where he's like, oh, come back and watch the other one next summer or 3 months later. But this movie, no one was going to watch a 4-hour movie. There are going to be people that will 100% sit down and watch a 4-hour movie, but how inconvenient is going to be. But at the same time, they could have probably made a lot of money because more people were going to come back and watch it again. Cause like, what did I miss? I went to the bathroom. You can't put pause. So I watched this movie twice since it's come out. So,
yeah, me too.
But I watched it in like multiple settings. Like I watched it over a weekend, 1 hour, 1 hour, 1 hour.
Nice. I watched it one time straight sitting, and then the second time multiple. I paused between the breaks. But just a side note, really quick, Zack Snyder actually did say when it does come out in movie theaters, and if it had came out in movie theaters now, like if they're able to release it, and the pandemic had like kind of went away earlier, they were going to have a Quentin Tarantino type of intermission for 20 minutes or something like that. So I don't know if you ever watched Hateful Eight.
No, I did not. But I want to say is don't be surprised if Quentin Tarantino is probably a piece of shit too and something comes out after that guy too.
Yeah.
I'm just keeping it real. Like,
possible. He likes feet, so it's weird.
I don't know.
No, you didn't know?
Oh, I don't know.
Massive, massive public like affection of feet in all of his movies too. Specifically Uma Thurman for some strange reason.
I've never seen her toes, but I'm sure maybe they're beautiful.
Kill Bill. Basically he was going to do an intermission. So that's great. You know, you watch the first 2 hours. You have like a 5 or 10 minute break. And then you watch
Rob, I'm not going to do it. I'm being real with you. America's not going to be doing that. I'm just being real with you. Americans they got used to their Netflix.
Yeah.
They will max stay in the movie theater for 2 hours and they're done. They tap out. It doesn't make sense. People want to eat their food. They love. Hey, man, how great does it feel to eat like a Georgie's pizza and just watch a movie?
Yeah, I feel you. It's unfortunate, but it's cool. It's cool. Look, I love the streaming stuff. So you're right. So you're saying the length of the film was it a detriment or did you like it?
I love it because it gave me all that content that I would never think was even like. Because when I watched the movie, I'm like, wow, there was really an arc to this. There was a lot of development. Which sometimes even if a movie is that long, they put like in the director's cut or DVD extras or like they had to make it so that in the movies it was just 2 hours. But they really put a lot of it's two different movies. When you watch this, it's two different movies. It's not even
the same. I think it's completely. Yeah. Not even the same.
No. I mean, they have similar things, points, but it's just two different movies.
Yeah. Yeah, I 100% agree. When I watched this movie, like I was saying, the main thing was honestly, Cyborg was a main like standout for me when it came to the differences.
I think he's one of the main characters in this movie. Like it really revolves around him.
It just is unbelievable.
And that's when he talked about like when the actor talked about like how he felt like there's a lot of racism and like mistreatment of his character. And he is the backbone. Whereas in the other movies, it's like, oh, let's highlight, and I'm not saying don't highlight them, like Aquaman, Gal Gadot, but I'm like, this guy is like the main focal point. He's like, you know, because I feel like Batman kind of takes a back seat in this movie to a degree.
Now, what do you think are the obvious differences, I mean, the main differences between the two, the theatrical and Snyder, besides the running time, obviously? What's the main thing?
I just feel like you got to know the characters more. Every character had like 20 minutes of like an origin story. When you watch Batman versus Superman, you saw those little clips about how they became who they were. But in this one, they gave you another 20 minutes or 25 minutes of why this person who he is, whether it's Barry Allen, Aquaman. I mean, I think the least person that got a backstory was Aquaman. He had like the smallest compared to. But like Cyborg, like he has a great origin story, period.
It actually matters too. And it matters, and you understand his struggle. And in the original, I gotta stop saying that. In the theatrical cut, I really didn't understand the point of Cyborg. I didn't get his powers. I still think there are issues in this movie when it comes to Cyborg. I still think his powers are a little too willy-nilly, like he can do everything.
I disagree with you, dude. Really? I don't think he has any issues. I just think he doesn't understand how to use his powers because he basically got his powers in the last like 6 months, you know?
Yeah.
Like think about all these other people, like even Aquaman, who has all this other stuff, like he has all these powers, but it's just not highlighted. I mean, Wonder Woman has all their powers. She's been alive for like 5,000 years or whatever it is. She knows how to use it. I mean,
Barry Allen is the closest one that got it recently.
Yeah, and at the same time, like you kind of really learn about Barry Allen. Like he's like, dude, when you meet Barry Allen, he has full range of his powers.
Yeah.
Full range of his powers, where Cyborg, he's just discovering his powers. That's all. That's my opinion.
Yeah. I think, yeah. I guess.
And he's also the youngest member Cyborg of that crew.
Yeah, really? Not Barry, huh?
Barry's like an older person.
Mm.
Cyborg is basically just going, he's in college.
You're right, because he's playing like high school football.
College football for Gotham City. He's just basically playing Gotham City. And he's also a genius too. Like they highlighted in his backstory, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would say for me, I just want to put Cyborg aside because I feel like that is obviously very obvious that one's the most character development in contrast to the 2017 Justice League. So I think with Cyborg aside, because I 100% agree he is the most developed, and I can very easily argue, and many can, that he's probably the protagonist of the movie. You know, he's the main person. He's the heart of the film, which is surprising. Yeah. We have Batman and Superman. But yeah. So I would say the second one, honestly, to me, is Barry Allen. He was such a clumsy person in the 2017 Justice League. He was so like falling everywhere, literally tripping everywhere. Yeah. A lot of stuff that you're just like, dude, are you supposed to be the comic relief? Because you're a little too like antsy and it's getting a little too overwhelming and I can't relate to you. And the only time in the 2017 Justice League where I did relate to him was when he was talking to his dad. And I love that actor, his dad, which is very unfortunate because they just announced for the new Flash movie, a different actor is going to be taking his place. Very unfortunate. So that scene when he's talking to his dad goes, put your hand on the glass. Yeah, I get it. Very cliche thing to do in jail, you know. But still, it was very touching. He's like, you're running in place, man. You know, you got to make your own future. Mm-hmm. And that echoes back. That echoes back in the end. Not only that, like, that, you know, I get it. That's basic film storytelling of foreshadowing and all that stuff. But just there was a little heart there. And in the original theatrical Justice League, that heart didn't make sense. It didn't echo back anywhere. He was just a clumsy guy and he just was clumsy.
He couldn't fight. He couldn't fight. Nothing. He didn't know how to use his powers. I'm like, generally, like you understand, as I said, like all the characters were almost like 90%, 80%. I mean, if it wasn't for like all the issues that happened and the unfortunate mm-hmm. things too, like I feel like this movie, if it was given more time and mm-hmm. properly marinated, would destroy like the Avengers. Not in general, but I feel like would be on equal par that all of a sudden, like they would be like, okay, you're not the laughing stock anymore. Whereas I feel like some of the other stuff is like laughing stock, like Justice League and stuff. Like I feel like they continuously wanted to fuck up. Like why did you want to continuously make a bad movie?
Yeah, Suicide Squad.
Anything. I feel like they made so much money off like the Dark Knight trilogy that they're like, oh yeah, everyone's going to eat this up no matter what. Like we've evolved.
Yeah, and they proved it to them. We didn't eat it up, you know. It made like 700 and something million. You know, which is insane, but still, it didn't hit the billion. It should have with an ensemble cast like Avengers. All of the Avengers have hit a billion. So, I mean, Aquaman did better.
Yeah.
Aquaman, which is awesome. I loved Aquaman. It was very fun. Jason Momoa can sell anything, basically.
Yeah, just take off his shirt. Ladies.
Yeah. Over. Well, I mean, his character is very good too. His personality is trait.
He's very different. He's very different from the Aquaman that people, if they watch cartoons or comics, he's just like, he's going to do his own version. That's what I respect. Like Aquaman, he tatted up.
Yeah, Aquaman's also lame as shit, I think, in the comics from what I remember. He was like a joke.
But the thing, too, is what's really sad about it is like he's as powerful or like he's like equally as strong as Superman.
Yeah, in the like, water and shit.
But look, like in real life, because he commands the oceans, like he has so much like elemental powers. And that's even afterwards, like when you watch his movie, you learn more about like, oh, he has all this other powers too that he's not completely aware of. And that's not even fully addressed in the Snyder Cut. But I just love the character development. And just give me 20 minutes of a quick, good origin story. I don't need to know all this shit. God.
I love origin stories.
Yeah, but even like Barry Allen's character, you don't learn how he becomes the Flash.
No, you don't. And that's cool. I'm good with that. Yeah. I'm good because I know there's going to be one coming out, but I'm also good because it gave some character development. And that's all you need. His dad. Yeah, it talked about
like I think the worst thing is all everybody assumes like character development in a comic book character is like how they get their powers. I'm like, no, tell me about this person.
Yeah.
And that's what you learned about Barry. He's like alone, he's an outcast. He's looking, he has no family, his only family's in jail, and all he like pretty much is dying to get a job, and all of a sudden everything in one moment his life turns around. He's like, he's got friends, he's got a family, he's got a purpose. And that's amazing.
He's got a family, you know? That's what he's been. I think Barry Allen's probably the second best development. Batman, to me, basically is the same. But I do like the addition of the gauntlets. So that was interesting. That's a cool take. He had gauntlets to basically protect him. So instead of giving Batman, which would have been, I think, at that point, blasphemy if you gave him superpowers. So instead of doing that, because they needed to have this guy be able to mingle with these superpowered people. So what did they do? They gave him the ability to dodge or reflect or absorb superpowers, right? That's great. He got gauntlets like Wonder Woman, you know? And it helped him out a lot. It helped him out when Superman was blasting the shit out of him when he came back. That was a cool change, you know? And it helped him out a bunch of stuff. So I thought, like, even though Batman basically got the least amount of additional time, the changes they did make, like that gauntlet thing I was talking about, how they changed his interaction with Superman when he comes back, that was interesting. I like that he didn't joke around as much anymore, you know, like stupid ass lines and scenes where him and Wonder Woman were walking out near the lake, and I don't know what he does, and he's like, we got to get the band back together. I'm like, what the fuck are you saying?
No, it's just like, stupid stuff.
They cut that out. They completely cut that out. They cut out a lot of stuff.
And that's the best part, is because you already understand who Batman was when you have watched Batman versus Superman.
Yeah.
You got his origin story. You need to know about the other people and how he develops his relationship with them. And it just went to the point because everybody kind of understands what's going on, specifically because we learn more about, like, even like it connects everybody together. Like Wonder Woman really tells you why Darkseid is here, who Darkseid is, and what all this power is. Like, you have that great flashback, which also shows you, like, hey, here are the gods, the superheroes, which also helps you, allows you to connect to Green Lantern, Shazam, and all these other stories that are later going to happen. But you can see, like, how an arc was really being developed. Like, if you went that many thousands of years ago, and there's other villains too that people don't know about, but it's reflected on that time period.
Yeah, 100%. And before we get to the juicy good stuff and the fun stuff, which is the villain and all that good stuff, let's just talk about one more boring thing,
please.
Which is color grading, right? So I remember I spoke to you like a while back, and you were like, oh, I don't really pay attention to the color grading stuff or whatever like that. And I'm like, totally. Usually people don't at all. And this is a perfect thing I want to ask you, actually, because you don't pay attention to it. I want to see how obvious it is, because to me, it's like, you know, I'm obviously paying attention to it, so it is. But did you notice a literal color difference?
Yeah, day and night. When you watch Whedon's version and Snyder's version, it's day and night. You just get it.
Yeah.
Like the way, even like the intro in the beginning when they show like Batman on the rooftop and stuff like that, it's completely day and night.
Completely, right? Like it's more toned down, it's more human, real. Yeah, the skin color looks, no, it doesn't look glowing. It does. And also, like the final battle scene, man, that red sky in Whedon's thing was just unbelievably terrible. It was like a red filter they put up. This one is much more real, more raw. It still had red though, in that area where they're actually doing that whole thing is happening. So I think the color tone in general, and you know what's weird? The weirdest part is that Zach usually, he does like intense colors, you know? Like if you look back at like 300, for example, that blood red, you know, and that intense colors he uses in the battle scenes and all that stuff. Xerxes gold all over him was like just popping, ripped. You know? Ripped, like it was just, everyone's glistening, like it was just, it's a lot of color, it's a lot of juice, you know what I'm saying? It's a lot of juice. And it's surprising that this Zack Snyder film, he decided to reduce that juice, reduce that color, and emphasize more on human tones. And these are superheroes. Whereas his other films, they're not superheroes. They're humans that he emphasized more like brighter, vibrant colors to make them superheroes. So I think this guy knows that he knows a lot about color grading, and he understands when you go too far. That's really important to realize. He understands that, hey, these people are already superheroes. Mm-hmm. We don't need to make them that hyper bright. And I think that's where the black Superman, besides the canonical reason of why, you know, that black Superman suit like gives him more energy and absorbs light more, sunlight, so he gives him more power and healing power. Mm-hmm. Besides that whole canonical reason of why he wore the black suit, I think it's also to make Superman more like grounded, you know? So just not to be so in your face. And I think that reflects on how Superman became more of a team player, you know?
Whereas, because he was matching everyone's kind of aesthetic.
He was, even Batman's. And guess what? The one person he fought against, the one person he disagreed with his harsh like ideology of life, like they both met in the middle. And in this sense, I think it's like a reflection of literal color meeting in the middle too, with the choice.
I know you can make that argument and it's 100% right. I just think personally, Superman's like, fuck, I'm still weak. I'm still recovering. Let me wear black. Let me absorb because literally he flies up to space.
He does.
And gets 100%. That sunlight, which is the reason why he wore it, to help him. So I agree with your point 100%. But like, I'm coming from a bro standpoint. I'm like, bro, like, I just need to be combat ready right now. They're not going to care if I'm like bedazzled and bold right now.
No. I think we're both right. What I'm saying is, I think canonically speaking and literally, logically speaking, that's why Superman did what he did. If you ask Superman, I think Zack Snyder did what he did to add a new layer is for the viewer's sake. So what he's doing for the viewer is saying like, hey, I'm meeting you halfway. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, you're next level, bro. I'm just like a dude.
It's like a meta comp. I'm just a dude playing another dude, man.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, man.
Yeah. So that's great. Okay, so let's get into the juicy stuff.
One person didn't get, but when the new person got bedazzled, which I think was really cool, which is Steppenwolf.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about him. Let's talk about Steppenwolf. And he did get bedazzled. Oh my God, he did.
So because much more cooler.
So much more scarier. Like when I watched it, I was honestly like, not to sound like a stupid geek or whatever, but I was like, I was scared. I was like, shit, like this guy's actually scary. He was comedic before. He was a joke.
Well, he wasn't a real villain. That's what I think people didn't take him seriously. And I think that because we learned more about the arc and everything else, you really saw like, hey, this is someone seeking also redemption. But like he has an armor. That's his suit of armor that he wears. Like when you're a bad guy, you wear, you know, like even superheroes have armor, and this is gonna get me pumped up to fight. And his armor played like several roles. There's like that part where they shot arrows at him and his armor just like broke it, which I thought was really cool. Yeah. Or his armor had like that thing that would read people's mind. I mean, this character actually had a more of a purpose, where in the Whedon version, it's sort of like, hey, we just need to get a bad guy in here. Like, it doesn't matter. He's like, he's just going to be a strong guy, and they're going to fight him, and they're going to beat him at the end. Whereas in this guy, you learned about his purpose. Like, why is he here? He fucked up. He owes daddy like 1,000 worlds. Mm-hmm. And that, think about this guy. Like, think how undefeated he is.
Mm-hmm.
And he's taken over so many worlds. And then all of a sudden, they meet the Justice League, and Justice is like, nah, bitch, not my world.
No, man. It's like, I'm going to watch this movie again for the third time.
Really?
And I am. And I have to say, I truly have to say, a part of it is because of Steppenwolf.
Really?
Yeah. I think it's kind of ballsy to remake the character so hardcore, look so hardcore, but then give him such insecurities.
Yep.
It's so confusing to watch in a good way. They made him human. Yeah, he's so layered. And I mean, I'm not going to praise him like crazy. He's still like a kind of like a two-dimensional or one-dimensional. No, at this point, he's a two-dimensional character when he should be like a three-dimensional character. But I mean, come on. Like, this guy has some massive insecurities because he lost like he did something bad, right? He changed the Whedon version was he lost on Earth with the new gods and all that stuff and Green Lantern. They changed that, thank God. That was a great idea. And they put Darkseid, which we'll talk about soon. They put Darkseid as the one who lost, right? Lost that battle. But in this case, we don't know what the hell happened with Steppenwolf. We don't know what did he fail that we don't, right?
And sometimes I don't want to know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's great to have a little mystery, man. Like, don't even, so good. You don't need to know everything about everybody's life, especially like some universal like god or demon, whatever he is. Mm-hmm. Just leave it as it is. Like, he's a bad guy, he showed up. It's sort of like pornos. Like, what happened to the pornos where like someone walked into the room, it's like, oh wow, you're hot, I just want to bang you, and we just have sex. I don't need to know that much information, just get to the action, you know.
Yeah. So you don't watch it for the plot, is what you're saying.
I do, but I'm just saying sometimes my bad guy doesn't need to be so like again, I think the DC world has shown like their villains, specifically with the Joker, they're more of the highlight, whereas in their, you know, their superheroes are kind of like taking the back seat. Whereas in this moment, like the Snyder Cut that did everything right, where the superheroes kind of got a great overall story. We don't need to know more about Steppenwolf, because I feel like in the next movie, if there was going to be a next movie, we would have figured out why Steppenwolf came to planet Earth, or what was about him, you know? Because you're going to learn more about the people we're going to get into, Darkseid and Zod, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And I think his body armor was an unbelievable, like you said, unbelievable addition. Looked very cool. It also, and guess what? Like, this is just brilliant filmmaking. His body armor, a piece of armor that could have been stagnant and stayed still, is not only an interchanging thing, but it also represents what he's thinking. So he's showing instead of telling, which is one of the main, like, cardinal sins of supervillains. When they sit down and they do the 007 monologue for 3 hours instead of doing the act, and they lose because of that. Steppenwolf doesn't do that, and I'll give you a perfect example of it, and this is a perfect transition to get into the other two bad guys, one main more than the other, but Darkseid and the Sad. So when Steppenwolf is getting phone calls, when he's getting Skype calls from the Sad, he has his armor on. And he's just talking to him, and he's just like, yeah, you know, I'm sorry, this, that. And you can tell the Sad is over him, but not that much over, right? You can tell he messed up and yada, yada. But the second Steppenwolf Steppenwolf daddy hears, like, oh, we found that, by the way, we found that, like, equation, anti-life equation. Suddenly he's available to take the Skype call, that little bitch, but whatever. Yeah, so Darkseid comes on. What does Steppenwolf do? He doesn't say stupid lines like, oh, no, you are Darkseid, you're so powerful, and I respect you. Nah, what happens? All of that's thrown out because you have good filmmaking. Right when Darkseid comes on, Steppenwolf freaks out. He steps back. He bows down, and all of his armor goes away. He's showing his vulnerability just like an animal would whenever they see like the dominant species, right? You put your head down and you show your spine. You're showing your vulnerability, like, hey, I'm vulnerable. I'm not here to hurt you. And that's just great filmmaking. He didn't monologue. I kind of want to like include my rant with another rant that counters that, which is he did monologue a lot. A lot of exposition was done with Steppenwolf. I loved it because I got to see stuff. Also, a lot of exposition was done with Diana. I loved it because I got to see the new gods and a couple of Green Lantern, or one Green Lantern character. Yeah. And I saw Darkseid kick ass. So what did you think?
In terms of the Darkseid, I mean, I did like that portion of like when Darkseid came and the new gods and that battle that happened. And it just shows you, well, that happened thousands of years ago. And I'm pretty sure Darkseid by now has evolved to super general, like, I'm like a fascist dictator god. And it was great. That's what you want to see. I mean, it wouldn't even hurt the movie, in my opinion, if you started off with that sequence.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think it would just lay out, like, even like if they did that in this whole universe. Like, imagine if they started off like Man of Steel or Batman versus Superman with this knowledge of like saying like, hey, because that kind of like, what was introduced to us in like Thanos into a degree when they went to the phase two, you know, when they did the phase one, like, you knew somebody was coming, you didn't highlight them, but it's kind of interesting how it would have been interesting if they went towards that route as well too. But I just it was a great opening scene, and it was properly done because it was like, you know, you're going into terms of like Greek mythology, Diana, like the Amazons, So it was really good to have like a field trip. But there's things that kind of don't make sense. Like, Diana, why are you wearing heels when you're like excavating this area? Like those, my dad yeah. said that. I'm like, why is she wearing that? Like, she's in like a tomb. Like, this is like, come on, you're Wonder Woman. You don't need to wear that. You can wear your armor or like boots. Those are yeah. the things that like, if I ever made a movie, like I would do those things. Like, hey, they don't need to look sexy right now. They're yeah. in there.
I get what you're saying. Yeah, totally. I guess it's like a woman empowerment thing too. They just want to be like, you know,
I can't speak on that, Rob.
Yeah, I can't either. We just won't talk about that. There you Let's go. Get back to the sad. Yeah. So Darkseid and the sad, by the way, I had no clue about the sad, you know,
I don't know who he is and nor do I care.
Yeah.
I'm just being real. It's like the sad is like
he's such a bitch. Yeah. Did I send you the meme? I didn't send you the meme, but I'll send you that. It's my favorite meme. This is why I also love this movie. It's my favorite meme. It's the sad's picture, and it goes like that one kid in class that tells on you, like, hey teacher, he didn't turn in his homework. That's what the sad was the whole time. He was just a bitch ass snitch, you know? He was just sitting next to Darkseid and like, hey, like, by the way, like, you know, I know Steppenwolf messed up, but I didn't mess up. You know, it was just, I think it was a very fun. It wasn't intended to be fun for sure, but I do think it was a funny addition. I have heard a lot of people say, hey, that kind of dilutes. That's like too many villains. It's diluting shit. Like, it should have been just Darkseid. I don't think so, because I think that introduction of Darkseid, like, with Steppenwolf, it would kind of show the importance of Darkseid. It showed how meaningful he was.
He's got representatives. He's got like ambassadors to do his bitch work. Then that's what they are. It's like, look, I built an empire. I'm not there. I make executive decisions. I'm Trump, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Facts. And basically the sad is Pence probably, right?
Kinda something like he's a great number. Man. He seems like a great number too. And then all of a sudden you hear something like, what? You got this?
Oh, yeah, he popped in really quick to the call. Yeah. So what did you think of all right, so we got Darkseid and the sad, but like, you know, what did you think of the basically what am I trying to say here, the interaction between Darkseid? And there was very little, so I don't want
to
go to
the ending. It kind of seemed it just came to the interaction seemed like, hey, he's a disappointed father, and like, hey, like, you finally did something that's worthy of my time. Once you have an opportunity to watch Avatar: The Last Airbender, and if you've not, it's probably
Watch it. I haven't.
Yeah, it's very. What's it called? Steppenwolf in these moments is very, very much like Prince Zuko, and when you watch it, you'll understand what I mean. And too many of our listeners, the 7 out there, and 30, and God knows where else, like, watch Avatar, and you'll understand why Steppenwolf is like that towards Darkseid.
Okay, interesting. Now, did you like the addition of the because in the theatrical cut, there was no anti-life
equation. No, it was right? They just needed the boom boxes. They just wanted the boom boxes and stuff. Well, the anti-life equation is something really big in the Marvel, I mean, not the Marvel, DC universe. I don't even know what it is, but it's like their infinity gauntlet to a degree. Yeah. So it's something really huge that Darkseid was like willing to come down here. So I don't know the exact things. I'm not going to look it up. I'm hoping for a miracle that somehow someone says, you know what? We fucked up. Can we somehow do the arc?
Yeah, return of the Snyderverse or whatever.
Yeah.
Something the Snyderverse. But so that was the anti-life equation. But like, so I kind of have some information I want to tell you about.
Please share it.
I'll tell you about in the end. Because it kind of leans to the end. It has to do with the anti-life equation, and it has to do with like Darkseid being involved more, and it has to do with the second Justice League, right? So the one that they were attempting, they still are hoping they can make, but they might not be able to.
They can't because half their people over there are all fucked up, because even Ezra Miller is, like, there's charges against him. Like, you're like, come on, guys, like.
Just keep it together.
Like, we just want it to, but they're human too, man. They fuck up. They just.
I don't know about human. Like, you know, like.
I'm not like, I just meant like, they all are fucked up people, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think the only person that has his shit together is really Aquaman. Like, really,
you would think the most reckless person, which seems like such a reckless personality, Jason Momoa is like the most stable one.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, in general, he's the most. I don't know anything about the Cyborg character as a person because he's a relatively new actor to my knowledge. Yeah. But Jason Momoa, yeah, he's like Khal Drogo has his shit together.
He really does. He really does. Rumors are that they want to put.
They will. Just say no. Khaleesi will. They will reunite. It's fan service. Yeah. It's fan service. Everyone will get what they want.
Look, I'm going to say something that's, I guess, controversial. I mean, okay, I understand. But
we're going to get canceled.
I love Amber Heard. I think that not as a person, just as an actress.
She's fucking fine as fuck.
She's very hot too. But also, I think she was perfect as Mara. Perfect. No need to change.
I don't know anything about characters because she was not a very big person in the. In my opinion, she played a big role in the movie, but at the same time,
yeah.
In the movie. But like, she can be interchanged, dude, and it's gonna be the same thing with like Iron Man when they got rid of they got Don Cheadle to come in instead of Terrence Howard or Terrence or whatever his name.
Terrence Howard, yeah. The first line in the Iron Man 2 was, "Yeah, it's me. Get over it." It was so good. It was so good. So back to this. What did you think of the final battle? Because that's the juiciest thing we're going to talk about. But before we talk about the final battle, since this became before it, it hasn't changed much. There was some changes, and I think it's significant. What did you think of the return of Superman?
Superman coming back, perfect the way it was, specifically with the gauntlet and stuff like that. I think there was we saw more stuff that we didn't see before. So it was great. I mean, like, there was nothing. I mean, if we're talking about Final Battle, we're also going, like, when they went to, like, fake Chernobyl, too?
No, I mean, like, that's the Final Battle to me. But right before that, the Superman, just a little fight scene. But also, like, what implications with the changes? Like, for me, for example.
I like how Lois, there was a story behind why Lois would always go visit Superman's things.
Yeah.
The other words, I'm like, oh, Batman, though, let me bring him in. Like, there was no connection. This
That's
one was
what
just
I wanted
like,
to hear.
Yeah. You happy now, Daddy?
I really am. That's exactly what I wanted to hear. You're 100% right. That's so true. Keep going, please. I love it.
No, I mean, but that's really it. Like, when you saw something naturally happen and that there's a reconnection, whereas I liked how there was story, there was a development, not all of a sudden like, oh, we're going to solve 2 + 2, like 1 + 1. We're going to put these together and like quick answers. I hate movies that are quick answers because there's no point, because then they're like, you're not really trying to write a story. You're just trying to create a series of events that make a story. And at the end of the day, people will watch it and be like, well, this could have been done better. Now, the fact that we saw Lois Lane every single day go visit Superman's, you know, grave and stuff like that, it was like, and getting coffee and all these other things was like a great backstory. And Lois Lane didn't take up a lot of like time in this movie.
Yeah.
Which I like. And they just, everybody played their role and position. That's why it was a great movie.
Yeah, and it made sense now, because when Flash goes back in time in BVS for that brief second and just jumps into Bruce Wayne's like nightmares or whatever, and he's like, hey, you know, Lois is the key, and then it just ends. First of all,
but
awesome,
there's a bigger
setup,
meaning.
Awesome setup, and we're like, what the fuck does that mean? And then we're like, cool, we'll find out in Justice League, right? Justice League comes out in 2017. They made it seem like Lois is the key for that scene when Batman brings Lois back, and so he can like tell Superman, hey, it's all right, and they can fly away. That's not the case at all.
That's a big, they sticker glued that together to make it seem.
Yeah, that wasn't even Snyder's intention.
Yeah,
the Lois is the key is the thing I'm going to talk about towards the end of this podcast, and it's an amazing key.
Yeah,
it's an unbelievable connection.
Yeah,
so that has nothing to do with Superman coming back in that scene. So the way this in the Snyder Cut goes down is that Lois has just been visiting Superman's memorial location because, you know, that's the closest she can get to him. She has been visiting his grave too and stuff like that, but that's just closer to Warwick and area, and she that's where he passed, that's where she saw him die too. So she's been visiting it constantly over and over again. This is called character development, right? They're developing a specific pattern in this character, and you're going to see it actually, it's called payoff. You're going to see it pay off later. So how is the payoff? Lois actually sees what's going down in Star Labs, or was it Star Labs? Yeah, it was.
No. It's near Is Star it? Labs.
Near, yeah. And so she runs there and sees that. It's just a coincidence, but it couldn't have been a coincidence if you didn't have the setup of this person going there almost every day, right? It wouldn't make sense Lois randomly being there. But since they have those additional scenes of the character development, you're able to realize, okay, it makes sense why Lois is there. So Lois is there and goes, oh, hey, like Superman, calm down. Like, you know, it's me. Let's just get out of here. That part plays the same, which is cool. They fly away and all that shit. Now the Justice League is confused, doesn't know what the fuck to do. They're like, okay, we gotta fight. We gotta fight Steppenwolf by ourselves. That leads me to the question of, what did you think of the final battle in the Chernobyl-esque place?
And one, I was really happy that they got rid of like the whole like Russian families and stuff like that. Oh, those little, like, there was really unnecessary fillers that we didn't need to. There was no connection to anybody there.
But Dostoevsky, come on.
I have no idea, but like, it's really what people wanted to know was see an epic battle. Hey, we're all gonna, like, we're gonna invade the castle. This is our plan. And there's like some segments that is really cheesy and stuff, like with Aquaman surfing on those people and like,
yeah, gliding.
It looks cool, but I'm like, I really didn't need to see that. It would have been cool if they assaulted the fortress a little better than it's like, oh, we're just gonna go directly. What plan was there? There was no plan whatsoever. I know that Barry and Cyborg had a plan on its own, but that didn't seem like a very Batman-ish thought out plan. Now, what is the best part is when pretty much what Barry Allen does, which I think everybody does. When he goes to, when he just goes into like just super speed and just goes into the speed force and is able to reverse how they weren't able to save the world. You know what I mean? Because he's and the thing too is he talks about it, you know, like in the beginning with Bruce Wayne when he gets first recruited, he's like, oh, I can go into this place. And it was just amazing, one, the way they did it. Like the just the
visuals
was fantastic.
Unbelievable.
And at the same time, if it was Whedon's, what's it called, Flash, he would never have those superpowers developed. But this guy is like a fully developed Flash, which Flash can do all the things a Flash is supposed to do. And I love that sequence, specifically even when like Superman was fighting Steppenwolf and like the complete like cherry on top when he chops off his head and like throws it into like Darkseid's like, it's like, fuck you, bitch, and your bitch over here. And like, dude,
I love it.
It's like, I got you, bro. Come at me. And he just stares at him. It's like, come on. If this is the best you got, I can take him out. No joke.
Yeah. 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 100%. And also like another like beautiful setup and execution, right? A setup and payoff was you set up Barry Allen by basically almost hitting that traveling back in time when in the
make your Whedon, own picture.
Not only that, but in the Whedon version when he runs, and the reason they have Barry Allen run for house is to ignite the cube, the mother box. In this one, so they're like, yeah, you have to touch it right when it hits the water. Right? And you're like, what the fuck? What a stupid addition to just say that. Like, you have to touch it. Is that just to emphasize that Barry can calculate and time his running really perfect to touch it? That's kind of useless. I don't need to know that line. You're wondering, right? But in this one, there's a reason why. He goes, you have to touch it right when it hits the water. Barry runs and Barry misses it. It already touches the water, the mother box. What does he do? He runs just a little faster. He uses that speed force and reverses time so it could be right at the right time. Then he touches it. So it gives you a foreshadow of Barry's abilities to reverse time. He just doesn't want to because he doesn't know what will happen, right? So now flash forward, literally, pun intended, flash forward to, this is going to be the geekiest like podcast. Flash forward to that scene when it happens. Barry goes, boom. Trigger runs as fast as he could, breaks that speed force, keeps on going, and he rebuilds the reality around him. And you see, for the first time, I think, in any DC movie, the reassembly of Superman's like blasted Zack Snyder version, like obliterated existence of a body, right? Like blood, gut, everything gets reassembled, and you're like, oh shit, that was Superman. The mother box did that to him, and Ray Fisher's face gets reassembled, and you see his robotic components. all of that. That was, that scene alone was enough for the 4-hour review, I think.
Yeah, and at the same time, it shows that how much preparation and CGI. Like, when I ever heard about this Snyder Cut, I thought it was going to be the worst version. I thought, like, they saw it, and, like, this is actually a really bad version. That's when they had to redo it. But then when I watched it, I'm like, this is the version that should have came out, which we all believe in. And they really spent a lot of money and time in editing. That's no joke doing that CGI. CGI, you have to hire, like, an army of, like, artists to do those sequences. Like, you have to hire DreamWorks and God knows. Like, it's like, yo, Pixar, we need a bunch of your top guys for, like, a week.
Yeah, that, it's serious. It's $60 million worth of serious.
Yeah.
So,
and they fucked up on it, and they gave that movie away for free on, what's it called, HBO Plus.
Yeah, Max.
Max.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable. Like, so to me, that scene was just, when I honestly, I have to say, I love that they didn't spoil it. I love that we didn't get too many spoilers on it, because
we didn't.
When I watched that scene, I was like, is this movie a completely different movie? This makes it a completely different movie. And then what you were talking about with the whole scene of, dude, Superman comes in right when Steppenwolf is going to bash Cyborg, and he doesn't even stop it with his hands, like in the Snyder Cut. I mean, like in the Whedon Cut. He just stands there, and it hits him right in his shoulder.
Nothing.
Don't phase me, bro. Nothing. Come on, bro. Flex at me. And he just blows right at that thing, freezes Steppenwolf's thing, axe. And then to give it a nice thing, payoff, it's like that shoulder area where he hit. I had read the song. It was really cool. It's the same place where Superman blasts his rays on Steppenwolf's shoulder. He hits that same shoulder.
Hmm.
And it's the same place where Darkseid gets his shoulder axed by
Zeus
or Ares. Ares. It was Ares, yeah. So, like, that's cool, like, callback. But, yeah, so he hits that. He beats the shit out of Steppenwolf. Laser blasts one of his horns off, which was disturbing, right? Yeah,
decays him. They slightly, like, emasculates him or something.
Oh, yeah, like, it takes out basically 50% of his, like, masculinity, I imagine. He has both horns. And then, like, they just add insult to injury, literally and metaphorically in this sense. Aquaman spears him nicely, like a little tuna fish. He just right there. He just tuna fishes him, kicks him, throws him out, and then Wonder Woman just slices his head off. And then Darkseid just bashes his brain. Like, just this, the description of this, it's like so intense in comparison to Whedon's version, which was, what was it? What was Whedon's version?
I don't remember it, and I don't want to. This is the only version I want to remember.
Yeah, he punches him to death, I think. Or something. He doesn't even kill him. No. He punches him a lot until a boom mic comes and a boom.
Boom box. And he just.
And he takes him, yeah. So, yeah. And then we see Darkseid. And I love the nice little thing of, like, we'll use our old ways. You know? Like, he's going to get his armada and he's just going to come. One thing I do have to say. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of logical inconsistencies. But one thing I do have to say is, like, if Darkseid has been looking for the anti-life equation and he hasn't found it, and Steppenwolf said that, hold up, Darkseid found the anti-life equation when he first invaded Earth. Why the hell didn't he not remember where it was once he got his ass kicked and he left? Did he forget, like GPS or what?
There could be so many things. There could have been, like, the lantern core hid it away. The destruction of Krypton impacted things. There's so many things that they could, or, like, we'll probably get into it, like the Martian Manhunter hit it or something like that, or figured it out, because the Martian Manhunter comes from Mars, where the equation of anti-life comes from. And what a lot of people don't realize is it's one of the reasons why Mars's civilization gets destroyed. I mean, that's in the comics and stuff like that.
Nice. Yeah, well, really interesting, though. So, yeah, basically, we talked about the end of the movie, but there was some weird ones. Like, I mean, since we said it, let's talk about the Martian Manhunter, because I think that was a terrible addition.
You think so?
I have nothing against the character. It's just that Lois Lane scene, like, and Martha, like it that could have been a scene with actually Martha Wayne.
I thought it was Martha Lane. And I agree with you, if it sucked, yeah, it's just like it, we didn't need the we didn't need the Martian Manhunter to go there, you know what I mean? Because Lois is still gonna go and see Superman that day.
I mean that's true too, but like honestly, it took away from both characters' like intensity right there, you know? She steps out and she becomes Martian Manhunter, and it's like all of that emotional payoff you've been setting up and for me to feel for Superman's mom, you know, is now not Superman's mom. So you that was kind of unnecessary. I thought that. And then the end with a very weird Ben Affleck looking character. I'm not even going to say Ben Affleck. I don't know what that was. But seeing Martian Manhunter. And then he's like, just think of how silly that sounds. Like he comes down and he goes, oh, yeah. Like, by the way, there's like some shit that's going to happen. Like, OK, no shit, dude. I was at the battle. I heard a very large 20-foot man say, I'm going to get my armada and come and kill you. I know, you don't have to tell me, that's redundant. And then the second thing is like, what's your name? And he goes, he just keeps talking, he doesn't answer Bruce, and then he just leaves and he goes, oh yeah, by the way, my name is Martian Manhunter. And it's just like, Manhunter, the reason why they named him Martian Manhunter back then is because Manhunter was a term that the FBI used to like were investigators that literally hunted down people that were doing crimes and stuff like that. Hence the show Manhunters, which is awesome on Netflix. So like, it doesn't make sense. I get it. He's the type of person that hunts down like alien people that are doing like fucked up shit and stuff like that or whatever. Right. But like, that doesn't make sense to Bruce. He's like, what do you mean Martian Manhunter? Like,
it was just I just think it was just a poor introduction that they did. And maybe this was like film stuff that was kind of scrapped. And they just added on to it, in my opinion. I just feel like it was just some films. Because they're like, okay, Martian Manhunter is going to come in. We need to put more Martian Manhunter in. And,
yeah.
And they should have got, like, you know, some sequences where they call him Kal-El and stuff like that to Superman. I feel like he should have just given his real name. And I forgot Martian Manhunter's name, but it's something equivalent to, like, Kal-El and something.
Yeah, like, do that. Was that O'Neal
John, or something? It's like John. It's like John.
Yeah. So like, do that. That would have been better than instead of calling Martian Manhunter. It's just a little bit of a nitpick. Look, there's probably a lot of like errors in this movie. I'm not gonna jump on that. I'm just happy this exists. But now, like, another interesting topic, because damn, when we found out Jared Leto was in this movie,
woo! You know they didn't film that sequence together.
They did not.
They did not.
That's so cool. That's so interesting. Like, it was just on a green screen, and it was done pretty cool. It was spliced together perfectly. Like, I was like, shit. The only thing I noticed was when Superman landed and his eyes turned red. I knew that was, because I just recognized it right off the bat, that was taken from the nightmare scene from BVS when he lands and then when his eyes turn red.
Yeah.
It's the same exact thing. Like, they just took Henry Cavill's likeness and stuff.
Yeah, and she's just there to kill. That's the whole purpose of it. But that nightmare scene is later towards the arc of, do you want to talk about that? Do you know what happens about the whole purpose of it? Like, I like the introduction of the Joker and him, Joker talking and saying like that cool monologue he has and stuff like that.
Yeah, I liked it too.
And it references back to B versus S in terms of like him killing Robin or Boy Wonder. I like when he touched on that stuff and how they have to make a few. And then you kind of see like all the villains or people that have gathered together, and you see where the Flash wore that suit when he had that flashback in B versus S.
Yeah.
So that shows how everything is really connected, that they prepared for a bigger universe.
Yeah, I loved it. And I love that. I love the idea of finally, like, first of all, seeing Joker and Batman together in a normal scene, lengthy scene. That was amazing. I love the idea, and it's been a running idea for a long time, and it's been in Dark Knight and stuff like that, that they're basically the same type of people and they need each other. That was great. I love the fact that he gives Batman that card, the truths of card, like it's a Joker card, and he says tear it up whenever the truth's over. And in Batman versus Superman, in the nightmare scene, when Batman has his like assault rifle, you can see that card is taped on it, which is really cool. That's a great reference, right? And then in the post-apocalyptic nightmare scene where the Justice League throne and shit is all broken and Superman's flying, you can see that card floating in the air ripped. That means somewhere Batman like gave up the truce and just ripped it, right? And so it leads me to Snyder Cut Justice League 2, which was supposed to be, why is Lois the key? Lois is the key because basically Superman tells Batman, trusts Batman to protect Lois Lane so Superman can go fight Darkseid. And then what happens is that Batman fails and isn't able to protect Lois Lane. And so instead of Batman sacrificing himself, Lois dies. And as a result, Superman loses his living shit. Darkseid gets the anti-life equation and manipulates Superman at his weakest point. And Superman just becomes basically Darkseid's bitch and kills everyone and everything like that. So that's why when Joker is saying, you're willing to kill everyone around you, and he says multiverses, right? Everyone around you. So he knows there are different universes. That's crazy too. That's something you could talk about for hours. You're willing to kill everyone around you. You're not willing to make the actual sacrifice. You're a coward, because if you had done what you needed to do, and he's talking about that, if he had sacrificed himself, you would have survived. And that's insane, because it's actual like sketched art from Zack Snyder of like Superman holding Lois's charred body, you know, and Darkseid over him, like touching his shoulder. You know what I'm saying? Imagine if we got that, or if we get that. Like, that's insane. The connections, what a like insane thing that would be.
We might have it.
We might actually
I feel like there's going to be like a very big demand for it.
I mean, I don't know. I'm ultra excited. Just that connection alone. And now you understand Zack Snyder's mindset when he's trying to make, and also our mindset in this podcast, when we tried to do the trilogy of reviewing Man of Steel, BVS, and now the Snyder Cut, because it really does all link together. It might not be the best movies. Totally. I don't think many movies are the best movies. And people can make fun of it and say it's just a stupid comic book movie and not even the best one at that. Totally understandable. But it's still a work of art. It's still someone's expression. And to be honest, it's done really well. And there are errors and there are things that I wouldn't have done, but I'm just happy to be on this journey, you know? I agree. Cannot wait for more.
I hope so, but who's going to do it?
I don't know. I hope Zach is. But yeah, I think I'm done with this review. I think it was amazing, and I think I love the film. I'm not going to say I give this movie like a straight up A, but I just think it was a great
B. It's a good B.
It was a solid B. Yeah.
You passed the class.
It was great. Yeah.
But at the same time, this movie didn't have enough time to get edited.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just excited for the future. Hopefully, and that's never happened for that. I've been excited for the DC future. I hope it continues this way. And I'm excited for the Batman too. Listen, I'm totally happy about that. But if the Snyderverse can continue, I'd be really happy too. So that's me. I'm good with this review. How about you?
I'm pretty good, but I feel like there's an opportunity that we'll get a Flashpoint and be able to have all these movies connected with Michael Keaton. Even imagine George Clooney gets thrown in there. And if we can get like, what's his name? Forget his name. He did the Batman Dark Knight trilogy.
Wait, Chris Benoit?
Not Chris, the actor.
Oh my God.
Yeah, you're drawing a blank.
Yeah.
You're failing right now.
Yeah, I'm failing. I don't know why. I just got too excited with this whole thing. Christian Bale. Yeah. Christian Bale.
You have enough people that you can bring them all back and create this world. And you don't. The thing too is, you don't have to make it all. You can show glimpses of it, just sort of like in the Spider-Verse one.
Yeah.
You don't have to like give us so much stuff, but solid B movie. Honestly, it could have been A minus if they edited it.
Solid B movie for sure. Yeah. Alrighty, well, that's our review for Zack Snyder's The Justice League. You guys can go watch it on HBO Max. Enjoy. I'm sure you'll love it.
Make sure to have plenty of food with you. It is a long watch,
but worth it.
Good night, guys. Bye-bye.